Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, race fans. How the hell are you? Tuned in to another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. Glad to be here on this Thursday night. Tell you what, a lot of great things going on in NASCAR, a lot of great things to talk about tonight. I'm going to bring in your host, Chris Yellowcross with Blake Creighton, and his co-host, Craig Moore, here in just one second. Looking forward to another great weekend of racing. NASCAR will be in Charlotte. I get an opportunity at the beginning of November to be in Charlotte for the World of Outlaws, and of course, in September, we're going to be out there at Homestead and the championship weekend and the Dale Jr. retirement. So I'm short in myself. Definitely very excited about the couple of upcoming events. But I want to make sure that I thank Fit for Life, I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio for help make all this possible. Without these marketing partners and networks, we wouldn't be able to do this. So I got to thank them. Make sure you guys check us out on Twitter at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out our site, www.110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. Glad to have Craig back in the studio. I know his family has been going through some tough times, and I don't want to put all his birthdays out there, but it's glad to have you back, Craig. Thursday night's not been the same without you, and just glad that you guys were able to get through all the tough times for you, and hopefully everything. Getting close back to normal in your guys' household. So I just wanted to throw that out there real quick. I'm praying for Vegas. I stay out of all that. Everything going on, and you got all the conspiracy theories and all these other things. I try to stay out of that. We got other things that we need to focus on, and more things personally going on right now. Get involved with all that. When the final reports come out, then we'll know a little bit more of the truth of what went on. But when it gets Chris in the studio, Craig in the studio. I'm going to kick back and enjoy some Racing with Big Sweat, race talk. Chris, how you doing tonight?
Hey, how you doing, race fans? Glad to be on the show again. Racing with Big Sweat, another Thursday night. Just a quick fact, we've got just a few shows left for this season. We'll be cutting loose the week before Thanksgiving. That'll be our last show of the year, so buckle in, strap down, and, well, we got a hurricane coming. Did y'all hear about it?
No.
Yeah, we got a hurricane coming up to the Gulf Coast again, and it's going to head right towards us this time. So when they hit it to the left, and they hit it to the right, and now they're shooting right through the middle. So we'll hold on here this weekend, and hopefully won't get blown away. But, you know, we've had an interesting show the last few weeks. We brought on a lot of dirt track people and got to shout out on a lot of big-time street stock races happening here in the southeast area as Craig's been out. Of course, it's just glad to have you back on the air here, Craig Moore. Let's talk about some big-time racing, man. The season's almost over. We've concluded ourselves out of the first round of the chase. Well, most of the ones we figured would go home went home. What's the rest of the year got in store for us there, Craig?
Well, I want to give a shout out to somebody you just had commented on it or liked it on when I posted on the status. Friends of ours, Beth Moore, and I don't remember her husband's name. They live down in the Charlotte area. She attended the same church that Robert Yates and his wife attended, and they said that they were awesome people and they're going to be missed, and condolences go out to that entire family. I know what it's like to lose the patriarch of the family, and it's tough to deal with. But, they'll get through it. Slow but sure, they'll get through it. But, I'm kind of at odds. Somebody had posted this the other day, and I seen it online, about how the bonus points figure out going through. I mean, rest assured, unless Martin Truex totally has a screw-up over the next 2 weeks, he's pretty much a lock for Homestead.
Interesting point there, Craig. Interesting point. Let me give you some feedback on that as well. Kevin Harvick made a statement through SiriusXM Radio last week that he wondered if this was still the playoff structure that it was intended to be, especially with the playoff points. He said that coming into a playoff series, everything should be evened out, and it doesn't seem to be the case with these playoff points. In other words, you can pretty much catch a bye on a couple of races here. Go ahead with that, Craig.
Well, Martin's got a 51-point lead going into Charlotte Sunday night. That's pretty much a full race because you can only get 60 points per race. So he can literally have a bad race at Charlotte break early, and he will rebound at Talladega. I mean, even though that race along with Martinsville going into the third round, those two races are crapshoots, but he could have a bad Charlotte and still be fine, and he's a lock to go to the third round. I mean, he does well on mile and a half drafts.
Interesting that you say that, Craig, because what you're basically saying, and we'll just give you some speaking points off of what you're saying. If he can kind of make it through this round, it pretty much solidifies him all the way to Homestead. And this round is going to be pretty important because, like you said, there's crapshoots, I guess is the best word you can come up with Martinsville and Talladega. Anything can happen at either one of those tracks. Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, because we have this one at Charlotte. Then we have Talladega. Then we have Kansas. Then we move to Martinsville. So I think when NASCAR put this schedule together, they honestly thought about that, not putting Martinsville and Talladega like they used to have it back-to-back. I kind of agree with Harvick, as this isn't really the play. I don't believe in my art that this is the playoff that they had designed. I think the points going into the first round are great, but after that, the field should be set back to whatever the points are, 2,000, 3,000, whatever. And it be an even keel from there. That's just my opinion. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, I think that the biggest issue that Kevin Harvick had is hold on. Sorry about that. That sip of tea went down the wrong pipe there. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that, okay? The point structure was not benefiting somebody who did well throughout the season. In other words, Harvick was one of these that wanted, back when he won the championship, regular season championship, he wanted it to mean something and carry on. Now, of course, it carries on, and Harvick's, you know, disagreeing with how it's done. So I'm kind of calling Harvick out right now, and he only speaks when it's not going his way. I believe other people do remember him complaining that somebody who wins, who does good in 26 races, has no cushion for his performance in the first 26 races. So I'm calling Harvick on his bull there.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I understand that. I understand his philosophy from 2 years ago, whatever. But now looking at it coming forward to 2017 and beyond, you're guaranteeing that you're going to have your top four people for the season based on these bonus points.
Right. Well, Craig, I mean, stop right there. Stop. What if we restructured these points, and instead of carrying the points over, you accumulate the points into the playoffs? But I guess the problem with that is by the time you get to Homestead, Well, no, so they zero out at Homestead, okay? So they are all zeroed out at Homestead. That's great. But maybe we help them accumulate points throughout the playoffs, and only playoff points, well, they're called playoff points. Do you see the box that NASCAR's kind of put us in here? We're talking about points, you know? And that's mm-hmm. good that we're talking about points, but like you said, it just seems to be a misfit. I believe in the stage points. I think that has made it interesting. I think drivers are going to go harder after it. And so to give the honest opinion of whether or not this is going to work, we haven't even completed the first season. I guess, Craig, what I'm saying is we'll have to give it a couple years and see how it works. Of course, right now I think there is flaws in it. And as you said, you know, these guys are able to pretty much position themselves a guarantee in the first round of the playoffs. And maybe that's the way it should be. We'll have to give it a couple years and see. But go ahead with your point.
Can I
Mr. CJ Sports comes in. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mr. CJ Sports. Go ahead.
I want to slide in with two things. One, I understand the concern of the points. I think we all had these concerns when we saw Truex and Larson start to accumulate all the points they got. Two points. One, this is what the
two
old
points.
Time
I mean,
NAS-
why don't you go for the three-pointer? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is what the old-time NASCAR fans wanted. They didn't like the fact that the regular season really meant nothing. We was crowning a champion based off 10 races. And so this was a way to kind of bridge it together. And so what you did all year long mattered as well as what you did in the playoffs. I understand most other sports, first round bye, if you accumulate the points, then yes, it becomes more of a level playing field. And so I agree with you, Craig. But NASCAR to me is a little bit different. And this was a way to combine the new NASCAR with the playoff system, with old NASCAR, with the season matters as well. So to Chris's point, yeah, I want to see this play out another year or two. But I think the biggest thing that the drivers and the teams learned, and I think they're going to take away from this year, is those stage points. I think racing next year is going to be different because I think they didn't really understand the impact or how important these points were, except for Kyle Larson and Martin Truex. I don't think anybody else really thought about how important these points were. They said it, but I don't think they really knew how important it was going to be. I think now all these teams have learned how important these stage wins are.
Yeah, I agree 100% there, CJ Sports. They didn't know the gamble until they walked away from the table knowing they could have gotten a little bit more. Now they know the name of the game. We're going to see a different way of playing cards next year. Go ahead, Craig.
Oh, absolutely. And I think once Martin and Kyle got a little – Larson, that is, got a little bit further out, almost to the unreachable stage, 2-3 races, it was time the other teams said, hey, we better throw a couple of Hail Marys here, to use a football analogy, and see what the heck's going to happen. It wasn't until, like I said, till they got that far out in points that it seemed like the rest of what is now the top 12, top 16, they finally got the proverbial heads out of their rears and said, all right, we need to figure out what these guys are doing. And by the
just imagine a guy like Kurt Busch, who maybe would have fought a little bit harder all year long, or Ryan Newman. We all know how hard it is to pass Ryan Newman. I think Kenseth got the name of the game. But you were trying to run against Martin Truex Jr. instead of running your own game, because basically these stage points can really add up to something. If you get that wild card win, then you from there on need to be racing for stage points and not necessarily the victory. Am I right or wrong, guys? Isn't this the playbook that Truex used himself?
Absolutely. You know, and I think Kurt, once he won the Daytona 500 way back in February, he figured, okay, well, we're into the first round of the chase. I don't think he was necessary. I think he was just on the coasting mode. Like, all right, well, we're having some problems, but we'll figure it out. after Daytona in July. Well, after in
Daytona. Yeah, but you could have raced a whole nother race, Kurt Busch. You had the whole year, Mr. Kurt Busch, to race your own races, pit strategies and all, so that you could collect an endless amount of bonus points because you just set your pit strategy different than everybody else's. Go ahead, Craig.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was getting at. He got that automatic into the first round. He had the next 25 races to build up stage points. He didn't do that. He didn't build himself up a cushion. Meanwhile, Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Larson, even Kyle Busch. I mean, he didn't win till August, I believe. But they were all building themselves up with stage wins. Whereas 13 through 16, they got in via points.
Right.
It just goes to show that the top-tier guys are taking it more serious, I think. Excuse me. Or maybe not even more serious, but they figured out a way to play the game their own way.
Yeah, they maximized their ability to lock into those stage points. And I'll be honest with you, we've seen Truex find out how to lose races this year. We've watched Truex learn how to lose races for the past 2 years, guys. I mean, he's got, 12 wins? He could every bit of have 18 to 20 wins already. We're talking about the hottest driver out there on the track right now. Cole Pirn played the math, understood that he wasn't running anybody else's game because nobody else had strategy and everybody else just followed the lead. And then some crew chiefs got to thinking, well, wait a minute, we understand the game he's playing, so wait for a couple of years to see really what this does. And guys, we may have a very interesting race coming down to every stage, just like it's the end of a race. I mean, at first people didn't think these things meant anything, but obviously if NASCAR plays this the way that it's orchestrated now, you're looking at changing the game throughout the season. CJ, you still there? I mean, what do you think, bud?
Yeah, I'm still listening. I agree with you. I want to see this play out a couple of years. I'm really more interested in next year. I'm very interested to see how teams and how drivers make the adjustment and how they game plan for next year after being this year. And to your guys' point, it does blow my mind as well that Kurt Busch, you got pretty much locked in week one. You had 25 weeks to maximize your points because you didn't have to worry about getting into the playoffs. How
exactly
did you guys not take advantage of that? Like that guy never really gave that much thought until you guys said that. That's crazy that, you know, you should have strategized your pit. You didn't need to win any more races. You didn't need you were in. And obviously sponsorship wants to see you up front. But
half the field isn't compatible, Mr. CJ Sports. Half the field is not compatible. I'm sorry to mean to step on you. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying that I understand they got sponsors to answer to, but, you know, the big picture is that championship at the end of the year. That's what they should have been focused on. They should have been focused on how to collect those playoff points to help add themselves an opportunity at the end of the year.
You know, it's kind of like, remember when baseball went to analytics? Remember when football went to analytics? Guys, this has opened the analytics stage to racing. And, you know, Tony Gibson, not to put anything on Tony Gibson, but, guys, I got to put it on the crew chief. You know, he didn't play the cards right. He didn't realize the name of the game. And I think that Martin Truex Jr. put it on everybody else. Wow. You know, 53 stage points, man. 53 points. That's a lot of – that's a whole race ahead, guys. Well, 7 points off of a whole race now based off of how the point structure is because they're going to maximize up to 60 points. But it's absolutely amazing that it, just in playoff points, he almost completed a whole race.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no reason that should happen – other than, because that's racing 101. Hey, we win the first race of the season. Now we have all year to, now we have all the 25 weeks to figure out how to maximize everything else.
Especially if you're going to finish 15th.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about Kurt Busch went and swung for the fences, no doubt, but he struck out, you know, 25 times, guys. At some point in time, you would have thought that Gibson could say, "Hey, we've lost it for the season, but let's just pad us up a little bit so we can at least get into the second half where Kurt Busch can see success at Talladega. Kurt Busch can see success at Martinsville. These are his type of tracks coming up. Now he's not that well known to be a plate racer, but there again, he also won the Daytona 500 this year, so you have to make him relevant come Talladega."
Oh, yeah, anybody that's won a restrictor plate race and in the past, there's 39 cars out there. Every one of them is a threat, including Danica. I mean, anything can happen. But, and you hit on it, Chris, he could swing for the fences. He could play, and they played it too safe for 28 if you count the first three in the first three and the three in the first round.
And gone in the first round. Right. He's no chance at a championship now.
I wonder what the team meeting was like at Stewart Haas Racing on Monday.
You know, and that's interesting that you say that because, you know, generally when you think Stewart Haas, you think great minds. You know, Darian Grubb. I mean, it took Darian Grubb to get Tony Stewart that championship, and of course it was well played. So, you know, I would be looking at not the engineering department this time. I'd be looking at the crew chief who maybe doesn't understand analytics, guys.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. So shift gears. We got the Denny Hamlin topic. We are talking about champions, guys. And, of course, I think my question for tonight, and we'll come back to it, is what was your greatest Robert Yates moment? And I'm sure some of you are going to pick some. So I'm gonna pick one that I think really meant something to the Robert Yates Racing team because it was – through a time of uncertainty, and it was also a move to go forward. And so you guys just ponder that for a minute. We'll talk about the Denny Hamlin thing real quick. Guys, what do you think about Denny Hamlin coming out and saying that he believes race car drivers should make somewhere around the same that basketball players do, baseball players, and other sports figures? I want to give you my opinion first, guys, because my opinion is going to be level and it's going to be unbiased and it's going to be straight to the point. When you're looking at what these athletes have and you start doing your numbers and you find out that somebody is getting $25 million more than you, that begins to eat. Now, a lot of this money is made in endorsements, but LeBron James will be a billionaire just off of his endorsements. In other words, you know, $100 million a year times 10, he's got $1 billion, okay? So this man's going to make $1 billion in the industry at the top of his game. We're not bitching about what LeBron James is making. We're not bitching about what contract Eli Manning signed or whoever, Tom Brady. You know, Tom, I know he took less money. So football is kind of interesting the way that they have it structured. It is not that ludicrous that Denny Hamlin is bringing this point out. And it seems like Kyle Larson said something about the merchandising. He got slammed. But there was a lot of truth in what Kyle Larson had to say about the merchandising. And it's like, yeah, you would think I'd be rich off the T-shirts that I sold, but I don't get anything for these T-shirts, which is horrible. So
that's amazing.
I'm going to swing towards the side of this, guys. Denny Hamlin has a point. Nobody ever wants to hear from an athlete, well, we're not making enough money. But you look at what these guys do, and you look at how long that they're away from their families, and you've got to understand that they're comparing themselves to other sports figures. They get just as much airtime. Their TV contracts are just as big. Does anybody else follow my point?
No, I follow your point. One of the things that I noticed that he had said was, and it's just not for, like, the Denny Hamlins and the Dale Juniors and Matt Kenseths. It's for the lower tier guys.
He's talking about for the sport. Right.
Right.
For the sport and
the
entire team.
It's for the lower guys. Or as he said, the back markers of the field, which I thought was very degrading.
Yeah, I found that comment to be he made a real good ass out of himself.
Yeah, he did. Because I'm like, here you're raising them up and saying they should be at the same pay scale as you, but yet you're calling them back markers. So, hey, thanks very much for putting me in your level, because I know that I'm not.
You know he's talking about Matt Diamondetto. Everybody else is.
Oh, yeah. And,
watch out. There's Cody. Where?
That was bad.
That's
got to
be
bad.
The joke. That's got to be the joke in the garage, but go ahead.
You know, here in one breath, he's talking about how everybody should be paid fair. And then he's degrading the guys that are in the back of the field. Well, hell, he's got to have somebody to pass and wreck. I mean, if everybody's a top tier team, who's going to be out back to pass?
Okay, and what I believe this is remember earlier in the year, Dale Earnhardt Jr. said these guys are going to be making a lot less money than me when they're coming up. You know, and Denny Hamlin and Harvick had something to say about it quickly too. But they're protecting their brand, guys. I mean, they're protecting their brand, and they want to make sure that they're worth something. And, you know, who buys a racing shoe out at the at Hibbett's? Who goes to the Nike store and picks up a pair of racing shoes, you know? So they don't get the big shoe contracts. Now, of course, you know, there's all kinds of endorsements that these drivers do get. But, you know, thinking that they're going to get the money from the tracks, I'm just not sure if they're barking up the right tree there. I do see financial problems, and I do understand that the level of competition is not where it should be, and we're not even filling a full field of cars. Brian Frantz came on and said, well, guys, there was a time where Richard Petty's cars weren't making it, and everybody was upset. I agree. It is tough to watch a good car go home. But, guys, I'd rather have that problem than the problem we're facing right now.
Yeah, because when I first started watching NASCAR way back when, there was 43 cars in the field. Then they moved to 40. Now it's down to 39. If NASCAR doesn't fix the problem, there's going to be 30 cars in a field, you mark my words, within the next 3 to 5 years.
Wait, and you've seen Jeffrey Earnhardt and cars like that, they're 5, 6, 7, 10 laps down. Some of them are 5 laps down before the race over. Now, hey, I'm glad that these cars are out there racing and not starting and parking. Of course, NASCAR tells them that they have to be up to speed. So the problem to it is that's all they're paying for, enough to get up to minimum speed. And they can't afford to go any higher. They're hanging on. Denny Hamlin understands how broke the bottom teams really are. And though we don't understand the way that he was talking, Denny played – let me tell you guys, before anybody throws Denny Hamlin on the bus, the guy puts a league together to play basketball. He's very involved. There's a reason why FedEx has always been a sponsor. One of the few guys that have had the same sponsor, same team from day one. So, you know, Denny sees all sides. He's watched his friends lose jobs and be put out of the industry, okay? So where Denny Hamlin is speaking from isn't where we can understand, because we're not in the group that Denny Hamlin is involved in. When you're involved within the community, you take a personal offense when you have a good guy that winds up losing his job because the team shuts down. And then he's a little bit older or something, so he loses his job. You feel his pain. You watch him lose his house. You watch him have to move back home, you know. These things are the issues that Denny Hamlin has watched over the time, because when he come into racing, guys, NASCAR was booming. You know, Hamlin has firsthand been that kid that's come through the ranks, and now he's sitting back saying, wow, Junior's probably right, man. My contract ain't going to be as much. I've got things to pay for. Guys, you can't blame a man for protecting his money or his brand.
Denny Hamlin lives in a 30,000 square foot home.
Oh, Mike Norman, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
okay.
Oh, I'm not knocking the guy. I'm not knocking the guy. I think it's great he can afford that. But, and I'm sure he's got smart, lawyers, and he's got a hell of an accountant who ain't stealing from him.
Oh, but, yeah, that never happens.
No, I kind of said that with a snicker, but you couldn't hear it in my voice. But I was watching Race Hub yesterday, and they had the king on, Richard Petty, and he was talking about getting back to this. He said, we didn't, back then in the 60s, 70s, we didn't have sponsors. We got paid from the track by the number of rear ends that filled the seat. He says, we didn't have these guaranteed contracts that these guys have today. He goes, in that we're writing contracts for. We got paid based off how many people were sitting in the stands. So they have all these guaranteed, they have a guaranteed contract, they have the sponsor money. If I think if they went back to the way that it was, I think you'd see a lot different. I think you'd see a lot different reaction, both from the drivers and the fans. Thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. This is where the messed up situation comes in. Major League Baseball has they have a commissioner's office. They have ball clubs. They have players. NASCAR is a little bit different. You have tracks. You have NASCAR, and then you have the people that make NASCAR go. And so the team owners and the track owners are on two totally different levels, and then you have NASCAR that has to get fed because they're the sanctioning body. Any sponsorships or anything like that that comes through has to be NASCAR certified. They take a piece of that pie, and it's just a collection. So the tracks get 65% of the payout, and that seems to be where they feel like it's a little bit too much. And, you know, they have to understand these tracks have to run operating costs for all year long, regardless of if they only have two races there a year. They have to be maintained. The grass has to be cut. Of course, the facility has to be still taken care of, improvements made. I mean, it takes, you know, millions of dollars to keep these facilities going. Most of them are not taxed like the major stadiums are in big cities where the taxpayers pay for all this. So it's really, there's not that much money there to elevate these drivers and these teams to where they feel like they need to go. NASCAR has too many tracks that they go to. Now, if you eliminated half the tracks in the nation and made them run four or five times a year, then I think that you could, you know, imagine running Talladega four times a year. Golly, man. Everybody would be broke around here because couldn't nobody afford to go up there all the time, but we'd still be there anyway. So, you know, the way that it's structured now, there's just not going to be that kind of money brought into the sport. The industry's too expensive. CJ, you there?
I'm here. I'm listening to your guys' opinions. I don't know. I'm a big NASCAR fan, but I don't know if I guess I have different feelings about it. I don't feel that NASCAR drivers are worthy of $20 million contracts, but then again, I don't feel football and basketball players as well. So you're talking about putting yourself in a group of people that a lot of people are upset with because they feel they get overpaid to play a sport, and you want to be part of that group. My biggest fear with it all when you talk about this money is when you talk about the racetrack getting their cut and everything else. If you start making it where these drivers get paid more, the owners, the tracks, they're not going to lose their money. So then, therefore, the only thing that's going to do is drive up the cost in a sport that fans already complain about how expensive it is to go to a race and how much it costs for a race weekend. So the only thing that came to my mind when they even talked about this is how is this going to affect the cost of us going to a race or us having a weekend out of Talladega or a weekend at Daytona. If it's already, you know, kind of on the expensive side as it is, we know that these team owners are not going to lose any money. They're not in this to lose money. They're in this to make money. So if they got to pay their drivers more, then that means that money has got to come from somewhere else.
And
marketing.
That's the fans.
It has to.
So.
Exactly. And here they are. They're all stubby nosed. They don't talk to nobody. They're ill to be around. Talking about most of the drivers in the Cup Series. Yeah, they do a lot of great things. Don't get me wrong, guys. They go out and they do events all the time, and they put on that smile and they shake hands. But I believe, Mr. CJ Sports, what you're saying here is, you know, they're basically bellyaching about they ain't getting Dale Jr. money. And Dale Jr. gets the money that he gets because he's marketable. And a lot of checks are cut his way because he's a likable guy. Maybe some of these guys need to stick their neck out a little bit more and become either more like Kyle Busch, who obviously has no endorsement problems, and or quit bitching. Is that kind of your point there, Mr. CJ Sports?
When we talked about it last night, look, you know, if you're, the drivers want to get paid more, find a way to get bigger sponsors or bigger. Be proactive. I don't know personally, but I don't see too many drivers going out recruiting marketing partners and sponsors on the car. Usually they have a marketing guy. Be more proactive and conduct yourself in a manner. You know, I'm not a Dale Jr. fan, but he's got this down pat. He knows how to make himself very marketable. A lot of people don't like Danica, but she knows how to make herself marketable.
Danica just come out and said, CJ Sports, I don't deal with any of that. I let my marketing team figure out where I'm going to race that next year. So by no means at all is she going to lift a finger to try to make sure that she solidifies herself in this sport. As far as I'm concerned, she can get the heck out if she can't go knocking on doors to try to get sponsors. Because if she really loves to race, that's what she'll do. But I'm sorry for cutting you off.
I think she's past this racing thing. I think she's ready for her. She got this clothing line and everything else. At the beginning, she did the groundwork. She had that relationship with GoDaddy. She put the work in with GoDaddy and a couple other sponsors. Yeah, now I think she's ready to move on. I think it's time. She's ready. She's got her own stuff going on, and you can see this throughout the year. I just think that, you know, like Kyle Busch, like you said, having a sponsor on that car is not a problem. Regardless if you like him or not, he has this thing. It makes him marketable. And he's a winner. And we, you know, I don't always agree with what he does on and off the track, but he's made himself marketable. He's done things that catch the sponsor's eye. These drivers got to learn. And Dale Jr.'s kind of laid the blueprint out there for you. He's done nothing to deserve all the attention, all the popularity, and all the money he has earned. He's a great guy. He does a lot of great things, but I'm not saying he's not worth a lot of money. What he makes in a year, he's not done anything more on that track than half that field. And yet he makes more money than almost everybody out there in that field. He's laid the blueprint out there. Now, if these drivers want to be proactive, if you want to get paid more, do what Dale Jr. did and make yourself marketable. Well, yeah, I'm having a famous dad help. But, you know, there's other ways. Look, Greg.
There used to be an old saying, and you guys have heard it, I'm sure. The thing about race car drivers, and it was a big one that when football and baseball kept going on strike every other year, was, you know why NASCAR drivers don't go on strike? Because they race for their money every weekend. I don't think that's so much the point anymore with these guaranteed contracts, but you know, the lower team guys, like lower tier guys, like Jeffrey Earnhardt and Matt Diamato, and they've got to go out and they've got to race. I used to wonder why, when I was a lot younger, I'd look at the finishing order in the paper on Sunday or on Monday, and I'd go, well, holy cow, the fifth place person earned more than the second place person. I never understood why. Until I did some research and found out just that. There's sponsoring money. There's incentives going on. I never realized that. I think people, and getting back to CJ's point with Danica, yeah, I think she's moved on. I think that she's ready to hang it up, stay at home and or move on to her charitable foundation, whatever that is, and start a family.
Well, okay, that's okay for Danica, Craig, but you got Matt Kenseth. You know,
yeah.
Why is he, you know, after what Bubba Wallace did to try to get a sponsor, you know, I salute him. He went after Domino's, and Domino's better do something for him. I mean, that's beyond, I think, what anybody expected to be just a parody film or a gag. But, I mean, you know, that's how you go out and put yourself, make yourself marketable. And I think that these guys have missed the point. They're thinking their agency is going to go get them more money, but it wasn't Dale Jr.'s agency. They got him the money. It was the fact that he was Dale Jr. So these guys have got to find out what makes them Denny Hamlin, what makes them Matt Kenseth. And if they want to make more money in the sport, then they need to be helping repair the sport instead of acting like snubby-nosed drivers all the time.
Yeah, I don't it's funny. I can't reveal my source because I'll get in trouble. But I was having a conversation last week down in Pennsylvania, and I said, "So who is it getting back to this going back a few weeks with the Smithfield and Richard Petty deal?" I said to this person, "I said, well, tell me, what was the deal with that? Like, who was mainly at fault?" And he went, "Well," he goes, "I met Richard Petty." He goes, I was at Pocono," he says, "and around Richard's birthday," he says, "and I asked Richard, so what do you got planned for your 80th birthday?" He said, "Making it to 81." He said, I said, "Well, come on," I said, "answer my question." He says, "Let's just put it this way. It's not all that played out in the media. And Bubba Wallace helped with that transition, and Eric Almirola was not the driver that Smithfield wanted to partner with anymore. He wasn't marketable. And that's a shame because they had such a long relationship with Smithfield. So I think that getting back to your point with Bubba Wallace and Domino's, yeah, Bubba Wallace put the leather to the pavement, so to speak, and got it done. And if they don't do something for him, you know, but it was funny.
Yeah, that's interesting because we're still waiting to see who goes in that 10 car and what they're going to do with Smithfield Bacon, because, I mean, that could be the primary sponsor for Kurt Busch. I just don't – this could be the Outlaws breakout time, though. I could see some Smithfield commercials being kind of sarcastically funny if Kurt Busch happens to be the one with the sponsor. Yep. What's you guys take on that one? Would you be buying bacon for Kurt Busch?
Probably.
I like Smithfield Bacon, and they're not a sponsor of this show, but we sure as hell would love for them to be. We'd cook bacon all day long for a little bit of that $100 million pie. So I don't know if you guys caught the Dan Patrick show this morning. They celebrated 10 years, and 10 years of the Dan Patrick show. And, guys, for all you radio junkies out there working with your studio in your basement or in your mom's garage or wherever it is that you're running your podcast through, hats to you, because Dan Patrick is my hero, and he did the same thing that we're doing, guys. And he, you know, of course, Dan Patrick was famous off of ESPN and has done many sideshows with Adam Sandler and many other movies and stuff. But Dan also, when he stepped away from the network, he started his own radio show in the basement or in the attic of his house in the guest bedroom. And, of course, Dan Patrick is where he is today and has one of the coolest shows ever in the morning time. So shout out to Dan. And when I'm shouting out to Dan for 10 years, I've got to shout out to every other podcaster who's in their bedroom running a studio or you know, has a sound room, but it's not downtown. Guys, you know, hats off to you. We may not ever be Dan Patrick, but if he can, after 10 years, take that show from where it is now to where he is today, I guarantee you guys just keep on working and don't ever give up on your dream, because obviously You can build a radio company or a radio station or a radio personality or a radio family through the attic or garage or spare bedroom of your house. So hats off to all you podcasters. Anybody got a take on that?
Absolutely. You know, when I started my radio career, I started at a little AM station here, and then I went to another AM station. And then I got out of it for a little while, and I hooked up with a guy who was running a studio out of his kitchen. It was affectionately known as the Kitchen Studio. And to go out and pound pavement to get sponsors for my show at the time was probably one of the most difficult things that I had ever done. And I could sell ice to Eskimos. I could sell a heater in hell. But to get people to buy into your hype, and if they couldn't, still being able to front the money for it, that takes a lot of time and dedication. And
yeah, I think all of us around this table have at least 5 years of radio business, and I'm probably the one that's actually been in the youngest. But, guys, before I even sell myself short, I was also the kid at, you know, 9th and 10th grade who was still recording his voice on a cassette tape and playing it back, acting like I was the disc jockey there in L.A. So I always knew where my calling was. It just took me a while to get here.
I do that now. What are you talking about? One of the greatest... And this is off topic a little bit, but Todd Pettengill, who is down at WPLJ in New York City, the top rated station in the market, or in the top market in the country, started off in Amsterdam, New York, not too far from where I'm at. And so, I mean, it just goes to show you that hard work and dedication and wherewithal will get you where you want to go.
Yeah, definitely. CJ Sports, where did your radio career start?
I can remember I was probably a year or two into this, and of course we're going on about 6.5 years now. I can remember it was a year or so into it, and it was a company, a blog site, Sports Teams, and I'm still friends with those guys over there. They started talking about a podcast. I had no idea what a podcast was. I actually had to Google and be educated on what a podcast was even. But in all fairness, I didn't know what a blog was either. Like, when I first started writing on the site, I was informed that I was writing like a street beat writer, not a blogger, and then they had to break that down for me as well. But I can remember my first episode, I scheduled it. I only scheduled it for 15 minutes. And my studio was a room that was connected to the master bedroom. It could be used as an office or maybe a nursery if you had a newborn child. It was a regular sized room, but it just had two doors that kind of separated the two rooms. And so here I am, basically just a wall separating me and my ex at the time. So I'm trying to be really quiet because I'm really nervous about this. I had never been on the air. And I didn't want anybody to hear me. And that's what I think for 15 minutes. Wasn't sure if I would even be able to talk for 15 minutes. I had to add time. I had to go in there, edit in the studio, and I think I went up to 30 minutes or some of that. But going from that, knowing that first episode was me being super quiet, only 15 minutes, really nervous, going from that to where we are 6.5 years later and the athletes that I've gotten to talk to, the events that I've gotten to go to, and the great radio family we got here with you and Craig and Mike and Izzo and Shannon and Shorty in the background. I never would have imagined when we're going into that very first episode, that very first time, that we would be where we're at any point in time. So it is amazing to me.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome that we were able to go back and remember what brought us where we are here, and it's just awesome to to be a part of the podcast family. And it's always something my kids will be able to go back to in a digital world and be able to pull these radio shows up. And it's awesome to be able to listen to Steve's podcast and stuff like that from back in the earlier days. We're going to shift gears now into the sad story of losing of Robert Yates Racing. Growing up in the South, growing up here in Mississippi and Alabama, of course, Davy Allison was more than a race car driver. The Allison family raced at the dirt tracks here around where we live, and we knew the Allison family so well that we knew that Bobby Allison wasn't even really from Alabama. He was from Florida, and a lot of people were like, "What?" Yeah, Bobby Allison become part of the Alabama gang. He was he ran with Red Farmer and a few others, and that's where the Alabama gang come from. And so when Davey come on the scene there, a lot of expectation because of how well Donnie and Bobby had ran, and you know, the Allison name was so important. Of course, you know, the 28 team was around before Davey got to where he was. Cale Yarbrough and the Hardys. It was a Harry Rayner team. Robert Yates bought it in 88, and we ran the rookie season with Davy Allison. I can remember my father being so happy in that race where him and Bobby Allison raced for the win. And it just, you know, you would think that that was probably the most important time in Robert Yates' history. And guys, my story is a little bit deeper than that. I can remember in 94 after Ernie Irvin had hit the wall in Michigan, and you know, to deal with the Davy Allison tragedy and to have such high expectations, because Swervin Irvin was the competitor. He was the arch rival. He cost Davy Allison the championship in 1992 there at Atlanta when he took him out. So, you know, to see Ernie jump from the Morgan McClure number 4 Kodak car over to Robert Yates Racing, a lot of people are like, whoa, what are you doing, you know, Mr. Yates? That's Swervin Irvin. But Robert knew what he was doing, guys, and he got Ernie in that car. And, you know, the 94 season started out so good. Ernie jumped off, and he got some poles and got some early wins. And, of course, August come around. I think he had probably a 200-point, I think it was around 200-point advantage, guys, on the championship that year already. And of course, you know, he hits the wall and suffers a major head concussion. So that year, the next year in 95, instead of sticking part-time drivers in the 28 car like they had done before, they took a big risk and went out there and picked up a guy that Joe Gibbs had felt that could be past his prime, or not really the real reason why Dale Jarrett left Joe Gibbs Racing, but he got the opportunity to come over to Robert Yates. And through all the tragedy and all the hurt and all the ups and downs that team had gone through, Dale Jarrett come on the scene, Daytona 500 winner, you know, great guy, had him a few wins already. Gentleman Ned was his dad. I think there was a lot of expectation. Hey, Ernie jumps in this car. Davy had the car fast. Ernie jumps in the car goes faster. You know, Dale Jarrett's going to jump in this seat and he's going to take off. Well, that didn't happen. And that year, the 95 year, I can remember, you know, just watching the faces of the Robert Yates crew as they couldn't understand why the Havilland 28 just couldn't get into victory lane. And so then we went to Pocono, and it was the summer event there in Pocono. And I can remember rain, and I can remember a long caution and a red flag, I believe, and then a long caution for an accident. And Dale Jarrett pulls out, and he brings home the win. And just the sigh of relief through that whole race team. You know, back then it was one race team. It wasn't two. As a matter of fact, the second team got introduced later on in the year of 95 when Ernie Irvin come back and raced a Havilland number 88. Of course, the next year they swapped and Ernie went back to the 28 and Dale Jarrett sat into the 88 where history was made. So Dale Jarrett hanging on to a thread, everybody panicking because they didn't know if the 2018 was going to be competitive, because Dale Jarrett had not been very competitive up to that race at Pocono. When Dale Jarrett put that car into victory lane, it kind of signified that Robert Yates Racing was going to live on. And so that's my favorite, most important time that I believe, when Robert Yates really needed the win, when he really needed the comfort to know that he was going in the right direction, was that July race there at Pocono in 95.
I think one of the things that is synonymous with Yates that I remember most is just the power that his cars had. You know, you knew that he was the engine builder. You knew that he was the car owner. So for me, it was like a double-edged sword. You knew the cars were going to be fast because the owner had a hand in building the motors. I don't know if you see that much anymore. But for me, that's what I remember most about it. And then, of course, Davey Allison.
Yeah, Robert Yates was probably, Craig, not to stop you or interrupt you, Robert Yates was probably, and we know how crafty Jack Roush was and how hands-on he was, but even with Roush, I believe that he had engineers and stuff helping, you know. In the earlier years, Roush probably was more hands-on, but Robert Yates was the last hands-on motor builder, like you said, that built from the ground up and ran his own motors, because he worked for Moody. I forget the first name of the team, before he even went to Rayner. And of course, you know, that Yates power. We've been talking about it for how many years now, Craig Moore? That Yates power, boy, it's something special.
Yeah, and you knew that if you had a Yates motor under you, that you were going to go far. Real quick, and this is something I didn't know until yesterday. Did you know, and you probably did, that the King Richard Petty sat out half of the 1965 season?
Yeah, he went on strike over a car deal, and he went drag racing. How about that?
Which,
straight line for the STP, number 43.
He, and the first one, the first car, and I laughed about this when I was watching it, the first car was number 43, Outlaw, and that was a dig at NASCAR.
Yeah.
But they wrecked that car. That was when they ran, jumped the fence.
It was a Ford Fairlane, was it not?
Yes, it was. No, it was a Plymouth.
A Plymouth.
But what it
took
was,
one of those real shop cars and turned it into a straight line. That's about what Kenny Carroll did last week when he was chasing down that airplane at 156 miles an hour. CJ, I did want to give you a chance real quick to say your favorite Robert Yates moment, or the one that sticks out the most.
You know, Craig brings up a real key point when we talk about Yates. You talk about the power of the motors. I think that's the biggest thing that stuck out. I was never really a big fan of any of the drivers over there. I wasn't a Swerve and Herd fan. I wasn't a Davey Allison fan. I just, those weren't my drivers. And I don't think it was still Dale Jarrett got the car that enjoyed really any of the drivers over there. But I think that's the biggest thing that sticks out to me. And I know this is silly and very minor, and really what he has done for the sport, for this to be my thought, it is probably, probably disrespectful. But the Dale Jarrett drive, the brown truck, we would not have that without Yates Racing and it being on that 88 car and being sponsored by UPS. Like, after UPS, I still think of Dale Jarrett, 88 car. And someone said stuff the other day, and that was the first thought that popped in my mind, is drive the truck. We wouldn't have that. And
NASCAR, do you see what you're missing, NASCAR? This man, after 20 years, still remembers the "I want to drive the big brown truck" commercial. Do you see what you're doing? We don't want to watch the hepatitis C commercial. We don't need Viagra in our life yet. Please. Let Dale Jarrett drive the big brown truck.
but it's advertising campaigns.
Huh?
But that is what's missing, and you hit it on the head. that is what's missing in NASCAR today, is they're missing the advertising point. Silly commercials like letting Dale Jr. drive the big brown truck is something that CJ remembers.
Anonymously. Right.
Right. It's like, it's like Mr. Peanut. You knew when you seen a Planters commercial, you were going to see Mr. Peanut at the end. You know, NASCAR is missing that, and they need to figure out how to get it back. They need to figure out how to get it back. Will they? Who knows? That's up to them to figure out. We can. Our job is to sit and question everything they do. Good, bad, or indifferent. Our job is to question everything they do. Now, here, I got a question for you. Do you know how many times the person that won it, Charlotte, went on to win the championship? Do you know when the last time that happened?
I'm intrigued. Poppy.
Last year, Jimmy Johnson went on, he won Charlotte. Surprise, surprise. He went on to win the championship.
Harvick, how many years has he done this?
Well, he's got a late start. He better get his head out of his proverbial keister. But Kevin Harvick did it in 2014. I think whoever wins Sunday's race is going to be your 2017 champion, if it's of the top 12.
Well, so, and guys, I've got the odds right here, and no change by Vegas. Yeah. Guess who's number one?
Martin Truex, baby.
I mean, how in the world do you ever expect to win any money if Vegas always puts Truex as number one? I just really don't get this.
But how can you
Kyle
bet against
Busch is second. Kyle Busch is second. So Michael McDowell made the charts this week. Maybe they know something we don't know. It's 1,001. That's where your money is, guys. I got an inside.
That's funny. That's who I was going to pick. No, I'm just kidding. All right, here's my pick for the week. Because I've missed doing this, actually, for the last 2 weeks. This was probably going to be my highlight of last week, but I just couldn't bring myself to even calling in. I'm going to go with, drumroll, Kevin Harvick.
Wow.
Kevin
Why?
Harvick. Just because I'm tired of seeing Martin Truex.
And everybody falls out their chair. Laughing our off. Okay.
I'd actually like to see. I'm glad that I can make you laugh. I make Miss Dana laugh every day when she wakes up and looks at me.
That's why we're radio
people. I'd actually like to see Dale Earnhardt Jr. win it, but I don't really think that's plausible.
Yeah.
I think he's got a good shot next weekend.
No chance in hell.
I think I'm just going to record. I can find that theme song from WWE, and we could just implant that every time I say something that you don't agree with. We can just send it to Mr. CJ Sports, and he can just put it in there.
No chance in hell.
No chance. That's what you got.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. I've been to hell. They kicked me out. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Kevin Harvick. But I think it's going to be Harvick, Truex, and Busch. Kyle, that is.
Go ahead, Mr. CJ Sports.
Unfortunately, I'm going to bust the bubble on the whole Truex thing, and therefore I'm going to hope this who wins Charlotte wins the championship thing does not play out. Well, I don't think it will play out. I think that Truex is going to win Charlotte. I think he's probably going to dominate it. I went, last year, the 600.
and watching needles every single freaking lap.
You really stick your neck out on this one.
Yeah, I think Truex is going to win, but I think Truex and that team is going to fall. I don't think there's enough experience. I don't think they're going to win the championship. One of the best seasons to not win a championship. I just don't think that team is there on the big stage yet. I think that they're getting close, but I do see them winning.
Truex Jr.'s chance of losing the championship this year? No chance in hell. All right, so you know you would think I'd go with Kyle Larson just because you went with Truex Jr. But, guys, I will remind y'all of one thing, and I'm glad you didn't take my PowerPoint because we did not talk about this in the pre-brief. So I'm going with first-time winner Chase Elliott. You know why? Because Charlotte is the place where first-time winners happen. And Chase Elliott, needing that first-time win, there with the home crowd, he's got Jeff Gordon that'll beat up anybody who messes with his fender and helps him slow down. Watch out, because the Gordon-Elliott train is coming through, and they're going to pick up that checkered flag at Charlotte. They're going to take it home, which is right around the corner. No chance in hell.
I just played that. I don't know if you're going to hear it. But
no chance in hell.
But I just played that for you. I don't know.
Hey, I think we're doing this on the wrong hour. We should be the morning show. We've got more laughs than the Walton and Johnson show.
I don't know. I'd like to see Chase Elliott, but I posted that opinion, actually. I posted that thing up on the Facebook page yesterday, I believe it was. Would you rather see Elliott get his first win in the 24 or the 9? Sentimental says the 9.
Yeah.
Brain power says the 24. But
I want to see somebody go out there and run 15 laps on one set of tires, go into the pits after 15 laps, take that set of tires off, and wait till halfway through the other race, go in right there before they would the pit stage, drive it out for the long distance, and just do something wacko so that we can enjoy a Charlotte race. Because, guys, a lot of Charlotte races is follow the leader. One of these guys that got a little bit of cushion is willing to make this thing entertaining.
Well, yeah, I get tired, like you just said. I get tired of follow the leader.
I love Charlotte because it's right up the road from me, but it's not the most entertaining race to watch.
No.
Yeah, and it's time for these guys to play into the stage points, play into the cautions, do something different, quit playing follow the leader. And let's find out who the real strategist is in those pits, because you can do some funny things. And by the way that you know that you have three cautions, that means that you could probably throw you a fresh set of tires. Now, NASCAR does limit your tires, but at the beginning of the racetrack, you're not burning your tires off as much most of the time anyway, because, you know, you still have a little bit of sticky down from the other races, and you pull those tires off pretty fast. That way you've got that extra set to run the last 15 laps if possible. That's only 30 laps on those tires. I want to see some strategy. I want to see somebody going for the fences. When the big guy comes up to the plate and it's the bottom of the night, no matter if he's got 700 strikeouts or he's a rookie, we want to see him go for the long run. We want to see him knock the home run out. That's what we need this week from one of these teams. We need to see the home run. We need to see the grand salamo. We need to see the chopperoo. You know, the flight around the bags. The old, blue. Look at you. Go ahead.
Two things real quick. Mike's picking Truex as well. And talking about being funny in the morning show, Mike said, if I fall out of the chair, somebody has to come pick him up off the chair. So.
well, somebody
if Mike
over
falls
there.
Out of his chair, that means he's not strapped in. And that's not on us.
Mike stayed strapped in. So I want to give you a couple of other guys that could be first-time winners at Charlotte. The first one could be Ty Dillon. Another first-time winner could be Daniel Suarez. Another first-time winner could be Eric Jones. Another first-time winner could be Chase Elliott. Guys, I know three names on there that I know that could be first-time winners.
Yeah, as long as Eric Jones' team doesn't get fined for lug nut violations.
Always a loose nut somewhere.
I mean, I wanted to touch on that, but no, you're absolutely right. Eric Jones could win it. Chase Elliott could win it. So could 37 other cars. I thought by the time
so Danica Patrick has a chance.
Absolutely. But everybody else would have to be off the track.
Hey, and you know what, guys? Before we go, shout out to Danica Patrick. She ran up in the top five. This past weekend, had a real good solid run. Of course, they were playing a different pit strategy, but it was good to see that number 10 car run up in the top five there. And she did well. She stayed with the leaders, guys.
No, and I think that's great for her. I think that if she is going to come back next year, that she needs the next eight races, to prove that she's more than just a pretty face and is marketable, that if, and not that Stuart Haas didn't give her equipment she could win in, because they have. But she
I don't know about that. Go ahead.
I don't either. I'm trying to be very.
I think she was used from the word go for as a pawn as a way to get a fourth car. Or a better way to help pay for your other three, to be honest with you. So,
no doubt.
But if you're just going to go out there and wreck race cars anyway, why would you put your best equipment into those cars? So it's kind of a double-edged sword there.
No, and I was trying to be politically correct.
Yeah, shot over the bow.
Yeah. So I was being politically
fire
correct.
Fire at wheel. Who's wheel?
See, this is why I love coming on every week. This is why, honestly, I look forward to doing this show with you guys every week. And I can say that, and Dana can attest to this, that when I was doing my own gig, I'd be like, man, I don't want to go on and do my show tonight. I wish I had a guest on. It would make it so much more fun. Or have a co-host, and I honestly want to say how much I've appreciated it over the last, I don't know, however many weeks I've been doing this. And thank you guys for having me back after my two week hiatus. It wasn't a hiatus I wanted to do willingly, but needed to. But I think that if they're getting back to Danica, she's going to have to run good if she wants to be taken more serious than just a pretty face and a good marketing partner for Massey Gill and Tampax. I mean, I don't know what else we can do with her, what NASCAR can do with
just
her.
Just like that, turn his mic off. Just like that, Craig Moore lost his job, yo. Turn his mic off.
But I don't know what else they
got enough people stirred up this week. We didn't need that. Stop the press. Stop the press.
I don't really know.
You are now banned. Don't turn his mic off. He is banned from talking about Danica Patrick from now on.
I don't really know how much more they can do.
Turn his mic off. We got to be like a college football coach or so that we're putting some kind of discipline for this. We don't want to get sanctioned by the NCAA.
You better go change the pens, Chris.
I know another place where they're not worried about sanctions right now, too, and that's Louisville.
Oh, wow.
But a big,
oh, wow.
But a boom.
Wow.
I've been waiting on that one all week, Mr. CJ Sports. I didn't know how I would fit it in, but I found a way.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Turn my damn mic off.
Y'all got me to snort now. We're going to have to end this thing. So.
All right. So who makes it out? Who makes
it out
of round
one? Just don't say anything else about Danica.
I won't. I promise. Not this week. Not next week.
Shot over the bow. Fire at will.
Who's will?
No chance in hell.
That's what you got.
Please, let's end this thing. Go ahead.
All right. Who's making it out of the top? Who's after we leave Charlotte this week, who's in danger?
Go ahead.
No, Ricky. I'm throwing it out there.
Ricky Stenhouse. I mean, he barely made it in. Ricky Stenhouse, he's the one on the back of the – if we were running Black Flag Racing, Ricky Stenhouse wouldn't make it another lap. So Ricky Stenhouse is in trouble on the bubble.
What about you, Mr. CJ Sports?
Oh, I definitely agree. We're not going to a restrictor plate track this weekend, and that's really the only reason Stenhouse is sitting where he's sitting right now. I definitely feel that he is going to be finding himself on the outside looking in and find himself in trouble. Jamie Mack's another one. We're not seeing the same consistency that we've seen last year out of Jamie McMurray and the same consistency we've seen throughout the season. I think you're looking at Stenhouse and McMurray both sitting at the very bottom, 11th and 12th.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with Stenhouse for sure and Jamie Mack, and I'm kind of at a loss as to who else, so I'm just going to throw one out there real quick. Ryan Blaney.
Yeah. I would say Matt Kenseth also. Kenseth's going to have to show up. He barely got in anyway. He's played the points through the first few races. Kenseth, he could be in trouble.
Well, let's just put it this way. When he gets to Talladega, his average finish is 18 in 35 starts. So,
We've also seen Kenseth win two or three restrictor plate races already. So, I know he's a Daytona 500 winner, and I know I've seen him win at least twice at Talladega, so.
Now, I will tell you this. You're talking about Chase as your pick for Charlotte, Chris. His average finish there in four starts, 24.3. I'm like Larry McReynolds. I'm a stat man.
Yeah, yeah. Which 24 and 24 equals what?
48.
There's your winner.
And that's your winner. I can do math, and I grew up in New York.
Yeah, I got to add 30 more, and this is a 78. So, guys, have your stats ready next week. We'll have Ethan Sims on. Of course, check out Hot Laps and Stats tomorrow night. That's Mike Perricone. He said that one of our listeners said there was more in the tea than what I admitted. So, obviously, I'm drinking on the job, or maybe he thought I was smoking or something. I don't know. Mike Perricone, sit down.
No chance.
You can do it. No chance in hell. That was a shot over the bow, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right, Will.
Who's Will?
Who's Will? How about the one where I'm a sticker? I love that one. You're not a real moose, you're a sticker. I'm a sticker?
Yes, I seen that commercial today.
And make sure that y'all are always supporting the 110 Nation sports page on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. Yellow Caution Flag on Facebook. You can follow Craig Moore at NASCAR Roundup by Craig Moore. Like I said, next week's Ethan Sims on for the first half. Kenny Carroll filled up the whole hour last week, guys. I hardly even got to talk. Kenny Carroll, he is a character in himself, and he filled the whole hour last week, and I maybe said, probably five things throughout the whole conversation. So I love it when I can bring a guy on like Kenny Carroll and eat up that radio time. But I've had a good time tonight, guys. Glad to have the crew back.
Yes, sir. Is that why you've been talking like a duck's butt on wheels tonight?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to talk in about 3 weeks. When you do interviews, they don't want to hear you talk. You're there to let somebody else tell the story. So, yeah, I've been deprived of the microphone for about a month now.
Oh, good Lord. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Yes, be sure to check out. I'm going to work on trying to get, if we got one of our local guys around here, because we've got Super Dirt Week happening up here in Oswego, up in our neck of the woods. So if it's a local guy that wins, I will try to set him up for the week after next. And for about 15 minutes, I'll tell him, listen, we got to keep it short and sweet. Those guys in the South, they get mad when they can't talk. But I'm also working on getting my son's favorite driver, Stuart Friesen, to join us before the Daytona 500 as well. So, but I want to thank you guys. It's been a blast. It's 10:25 at night, and Miss Dana's got to get bacon cupcakes for a horseshoe tournament that we're putting on Saturday.
Before we jump out here real quick, I got to make sure I thank Fit for Life, I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio. Without these marketing partners, we wouldn't be able to do this. So I got to thank them. Tomorrow night, Hot Laps with Stats, 8 o'clock. It is the best of edition. It was the tribute show to Ted Christopher. They had a great show. I'm going to be out of town. First thing in the morning, I head to Gatlinburg. So nobody was going to be in the studio. So we're doing the best of edition last night. If you guys missed it, make sure you guys tune in. He had a couple great guests. So make sure you guys check that out.
Hey, race fans, we want to thank y'all for listening to Racing with Big Sweat. We're on every Thursday night. Of course, we're reminded you at the first of the show. We'll remind you at the end of the show. We've just got a few more episodes left for the 2017 season. We're always looking for new marketing partners. Guys, if you like the content and you found this to be hilarious and you want to give us an opportunity to represent your promotions, just give us a call. Or text us on Facebook. You can get a hold of us either way. And we want y'all to listen again next Thursday night, another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. Like I said, so I don't get off point, our last show will be the weekend before Thanksgiving, the Thursday before Thanksgiving. So we still have a few more shows to go. I want to thank all the listeners. I want to thank all the fans. And, of course, our hearts are out to the victims of Las Vegas. I know myself, guys, this has been a tough week. Big boys do cry, and I've been emotionally stressed over some things that have happened with our nation, and it was really nice to come on here and laugh and keep things in a more cheerful mood. So everybody, that's what everybody needs right now. Love and comfort comes from humble spirits, and so just love the ones you're with and spend time with those who are important. And we want to thank y'all once again for listening to Racing with Big Sweat. We will be back on next Thursday night. So y'all give us a listen. Thank y'all, and good night.
Good night, everybody.